Item four is hear comments from the members of the public. This time we've set aside time to hear from you, the general public. Those of you that are interested in providing comments here should fill out one of the cards provided at the table outside the door of the boardroom with your name and contact information on it. Are there any ones who have not been able to give us a card that want to speak? We encourage you to speak your mind and tell us your thoughts. Be mindful, however, that while you can say anything you wish, the board cannot deliberate or discuss issues that are not posted on the meeting notice. That is not our requirement of state law. The board is limited in its ability to participate in discussions or deliberations by the provisions of the Open Meeting Act. The Open Meetings Act authorizes a government body to give members of the public an opportunity to speak at a public meeting and provide comments. However, the board may not deliberate or act on any matters which have not been specifically posted on the agenda. In an effort to provide everyone an opportunity to speak, we request that each presentation be limited to 3 minutes each, please. At this time, I have cards here in front of me. First person wishing to address the board is J.C. Carsey.
Hello, I'm John Carroll Carsey. I'm with Old Planet Construction Marine on Posse Cube Lake. We're dock builders, and we do a lot of marine repairs. Recently, the board has chosen wisely, probably, to close our barge yard for a lot of reasons. However, we have a vast responsibility in the near future, in the next several years, of repairing docks, replacing foam. As we understand it, all of the unencapsulated foam has to be removed from the lake by the year 2015. I know that when I first came to Possum Kingdom and to live there permanently in 1986, I had a visitor's, or what we call in waters, idea or view of boat docks. They were beautiful. They were nice to fish off of, swim off of, view the sunset. It was a very romantic attitude I had. I had no idea about the problems that boat docks have caused and are ongoing. I've been in the dock business since 1992 with Pioneer Thomason, who has been a dock builder and in the marine construction and repair business for 30 years. I've learned an awful lot about docks. I see all the problems. I'm so glad we're getting ready with the foam, the unencapsulated foam. One of the big problems with that, however, is that in dealing with these docks, replacing the foam not only requires just sticking pieces of foam underneath the dock, it requires lifting capacity to lift it up and place the foam underneath the dock. Sometimes on a small dock, we can do that with two barges on the lake. Sometimes the base of the docks need to be replaced in addition to the foam because they're rusted out because Possum Kingdom is a saltwater lake. We can't do that over water. We cannot do any marine repairs over water that require welding equipment. It's a violation of the TCEQ and FERC. We can't do that kind of repair on the dirt. That is also a violation of the TCEQ and FERC. We need, and we beg you, please consider a location on the dock where either the Brazos River Authority itself or we as private dock builders or one of us or all of us can create a barge yard where we can do these repairs. I feel that if the Brazos River Authority does not provide us a place to work, we're going to have dire consequences. We have extremely violent storms out here. I don't know if any of you has ever been out on the lake after a series of what I would call a double-tap tornadoes in March, especially in June and July, during the vacation season. an authorized doctor grade, which is miserable. You've seen a few pictures of it. Some of you have seen it in person at the dockyard. If you haven't been there after a storm and seen the amount of debris that is generated by these storms, you will realize that we really, really do require, not just us, the lake, the Brazos River Authority itself requires, but they need a place to do these repairs, to bring material into shore. We have been given two locations that we can approach the shore with debris. However, we can't get to the edge of the lake, pick up the debris with our lifting equipment, our winches, our winch trucks, forklifts, and so forth, because of ticket kiosks. And I understand one of them, one of those locations, a road is being built around the kiosk, which is great, to get us back onto a hardtop. However, we cannot do the work in 24 hours. It's impossible, absolutely impossible. Unless it's a minor repair, we cannot do it in 24 hours. This has to do with the shoreline guide that you're about to discuss here. I really do plead with you to consider the need for the entire lake, and the responsibility has to its lessees and dock owners to care for those docks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, JC. Next person is Mr. Oscar Rome. Steve,
ask him to speak into the mic.
Yes,
I'll let the mic down.
Good morning. My name is Oscar Rome, and I'm president of Southern Lakes and Leisure, and I'll correct the newspaper article. We didn't quite get close on the Ritchie track last week, but we think it's going to happen today or tomorrow, so we will be moving forward with that. I want to talk about the boat loading study. In looking at the presentation, I think there was some inference that onboard facilities contributed to crowding on the lake. I think if the true facts were known, that visitor boats in on the peak weekends is what causes crowding in certain areas. We're on the northern end of the lake, and actually it's very infrequent you see many boats up there. So I would encourage you to take an approach to the boat loading study that considers different zones and different actions. The recommendation of a freeze, I think, is not a acceptable solution to the deal. I think as far as environmental quality, as long as you adopt good rules and manage that, these fees from docks can be a long-term stream, revenue stream for the BLA. With any good rules comes good enforcement. In order to, clean up some of the abuses of the past, you need to have a revenue stream to provide adequate funds for personnel to enforce these rules. And I think if these future facilities can be built very environmentally safe, and if you would make your fee structure such that it supports the enforcement and the cleanup of any other problem that you have, I think people would be more than willing to pay those fees to see that the lake is kept environmentally safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rowan. I appreciate it. Next is Mr. Lee Overstreet.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to stand before you this morning. Thanks, staff. They've been very responsive and helpful over the last several months, but I'm a resident of Granbury. I'm here representing our family property interests. I'm also a realtor. I have my own real estate company in Granbury. And so it certainly affects me from a personal level or from ownership level and a business level as to what impact happens on Lake Danbury. I'd like to address, first of all, the boatload study and the red zone, which is shown as areas 12 and 14, which that goes right through the heart of Danbury, which Danbury is right on the banks of the lake. But right in the center of that, we have family property that we have been developing and still have about 2,100 feet of lakefront right there in the heart of that zone that we certainly want to develop. And no new development of the lake is certainly going to impact us dramatically from a financial standpoint. One thing is that I grew up on the river there in Danbury. We've owned this property for approximately 60 years. And grew up there on the river, and then, of course, I've grown up on the lake. And there are issues on the lake with some crowding, but mostly on heavy traffic weekends or holiday weekends. I do know that there is not a lot of policing on the lake, and it's a staffing issue. I've talked with the city, and they are a partner in this with Browns River Authority and developers, and I think it's something that the city could help police this area. From what I understand, there's two lake rangers that patrol the lake, and they'd probably use two people policing this one area. It is a commercial area. There are two barns in there. But for the most part, that area is developed out about 97-98%. Our property is right in the center of it, and it's one of the last few remaining properties that's there. It's the most prime piece of property on Lake Danbury, because it has frontage on Highway 377 plus considerable lake frontage. So it's a tremendous retail and possibly residential development site. So I would like to ask that you would look closer at this boatload study and not try to cut the head off of the snake, but try to fix it and control it. But I think maybe some controls from over there and driving down here this morning. You know, I've tried to stay pretty much on the speed limit. I was a little bit behind, and if I were not concerned about getting a ticket, I would drive a lot faster. So I think some policing of the area would certainly help. And also the issue of the moratorium on any more cut-throughs or development of Lake Danbury. I am on the Watershed Protection Plan Stakeholders Group. I represent the Danbury Association of Realtors. And I was involved in a lake study back in the 90s, and then the subdivision reforms. I served on a committee for it back in the, about 2000 when that legislation changed. One thing, if the data does not support that there is contamination in all the canals, there are a few isolated areas, but this is information that is being brought to the stakeholders and being told to the public that Lake Danbury is a clean lake. There's not contamination issues except in four major points. And the canals that were built correctly, that don't have sewage issues, especially ones that are on centralized sewer, and I have a problem with contamination. I think it goes back to having canals that are a certain depth or curves, certain depth, certain widths. And if you look at that data, it's not supported that canals are a contamination issue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Overstreet. Next is Ms. Karen McCropper, is that correct?
Yes, thank you. Good morning. My name is Karen McCropper, and I'm a resident of Possum Kingdom Lake. For most of my professional life, I have worked in government and in the legal profession, so I tend to look at things from that perspective. But also, for most of my adult life, I've served on a number of boards, nonprofit boards, boards of institutions, etc. And so I understand what happens when your volunteer appointment or assignment becomes your job. And I think that has been the case with many of you with these issues about, particularly with regard to problem building for a long time. So I understand you've got a tremendous amount of work to try to come up with the best answers for everybody in this room, no matter what their viewpoint is. But I was on a board at one point of an educational institution, and I happened to chair that board. And we had a lot of problems. A lot of problems. And when I assumed the chair of that board, I looked at the problems and I thought, I'm going to be able to figure out an answer to this. I know I am. And I went home and I thought, didn't work, thought, and came up with an answer. Took it back to the board meeting and said, here it is, here's the answer, here's the magic bullet. And everybody in the room said, yeah, that's great, that's really good. And in the back of the room, one of the instructors at the school said, but what about this? And my magic bullet went away, because I didn't know the questions to ask to be able to come up with the right answer. So we said, you know, let's do a subcommittee. Now we have no people thinking about this. And they have to think about this issue. And it came back to us, and they had another book. And in the back of the room, one of the students said, what about this? And that was gone. So we thought, you know, let's hire a consultant. We're going to ask them that there's more about this than we can possibly know. And these people are going to know all the questions to ask. And they did a fantastic job. Due diligence. Left no stone unturned. They asked every question they knew to ask. Came back to me, somebody from the student health services, the school nurse, said, but what about this? Again, when you attempt to answer questions based on all the information that you know, and you in good faith can say, this is the best answer. There's always that possibility that there's somebody in the back of the room that knows a question that you don't know to ask. So, this is why I'm here. I have some questions, and because of this format, you can't answer them. So here's what we'll do. I'm going to ask the questions, and then I'm going to go sit back up there in my chair. And I'm going to trust that you know the answers to these questions before you make any decisions today. And I bet that you do, but I've got to ask them anyway, because I don't want you to be in a position of having somebody in the back of the room that is asking a question that you hadn't thought about when you make your decision. And I'm not any smarter than you are. I know a lot less about a lot of this than you do. I don't know the answer to anything I'm going to ask you. But I'm going to ask. First, with regard to market value, the establishment of the leasehold estates at Postal County might go into market value. I don't know how market value is figured. I assume market value means whatever the market says it's worth. What I do know is that there are some criteria that you establish to think about market value. Now, a lot of this debate has centered around people's concerns about what they're going to pay for lease rates of Postal County Light. And when it goes to market value, what's that going to mean? And there are low moderate income people, and there are people on fixed incomes that have genuine concerns. And I would stand in solidarity with them over the fact that the world is going to change, it's going to affect the private goods, it's going to affect a lot of stuff, and they need to be concerned. But you can tell from my face, probably, that I was out right around that lake yesterday. And I looked around, and while I wholeheartedly support the low moderate income and fixed income people, they're in the minority out there, I'm pretty much thinking, after driving around. There's the other portion of the people, some of whom participate in what I call Las Vegas on the Grammys, when people are offering me, for the small price of $70,000, the opportunity to pay $500 a year for this piece of land. And you know what? You are a representative of every city and state of Texas. You have fiduciary responsibility to me in my other hat, as a citizen of the state, to get rid of that. Because it's not the highest and best use of that land. That's not what you, and I applaud your efforts to do that. But how do you come to that decision? Let's talk about a couple of little things that might determine that market value. The first one is the front portion of the land. At the last Lake Committee meeting, there was some discussion about creating a new lease. And in that lease, the front portion that is regulated by FERC might be separate from the rest of the lease. And that's probably true when you think correct or not, because as I understand it, the FERC license says that it's 200 feet from the high elevation lot back. So if I have an acre lot, they have 200 feet of shoreline, 200 feet back, that's a portion of that property that you're leasing to me. Now, in fact, this is the best part because it's what makes it a lake lot. But in another part, it's not the same, you're not conveying to me the same rights and responsibilities. See, because that has different rules. Now, what does that do to the market value? I don't know. What percentage is it of that? I don't know. I hope, and I assume, and trust that you did. What if you were to value those differently, what would that do to the Star Act company's predictions? I don't know. That's one consideration. A second consideration is, as near as I can tell, at Pleasanton Lake, you all are de facto landlords. I mean, kind of. Are we really landlords? I don't know. But let's suppose for a minute that you are. That you are landlords. Okay? You're landlords, and as a landlord, you have some responsibilities to your tenants. Okay? For example, when I hear that there are portions of a lake that have no fire protection at all, is it your responsibility as a landlord to make sure that I have fire protection? I don't know. But you know what? If it is, budget yourself a little fire boat or two. If it isn't, you can put it in a lease. Put it in a lease, hey? If it starts on fire, burn that burn. What's that going to do to the market value, though? What's that going to do to that portion of that other lake where the market value is going to go down? Because, hey, I can't get insurance. Because I say, well, you insure me because I have a fire by the way. There's no possibility that it's going to be put out. So it's a total loss. And then, in general, am I going to sign a lease that says, I'm going to lease this land, and then if it burns down, too bad. I don't know. Does that impact market value? Not sure. Is the proposed market value important to you all? Again, I don't know. I trust that you're good. Another area, are the repercussions of things. Now, you're increasing the regulations, and boy, I'm all for that. There's a heck of a lot of property over there that needs to have some enforcement of some regulations. You've seen it. You drove around the boat last year, and you saw it, or you lived there, and you saw it. Need to enforce those regulations. However, I believe that the current policy is that if you cancel a lease, you can't re-lease it. So if I know that you're going to enforce regulations on me, but in effect, the worst thing you can do is keep yelling at me, because you can't take it away from me, because if you do, you got to hang on to it, and that house is going to sit there empty, and then it's yours. And whatever happens to it, y'all got to worry about if it burns down. So, if you follow my logic here, what I'm saying is that part of that policy is still in place? That if you cancel a lease, you're effectively rendering useless in the, when push comes to shove, your ability to enforce that. That doesn't make sense to me. Perhaps I'm wrong. I trust you know. In the last area is this. I think it's wonderful to suggest that if I am a current lessee and you go to this market value, and but you're going to let me, because I'm already a lessee, you're going to allow me the opportunity to sign an 50-year lease. That's great. Now, my understanding was that the 50-year lease was going to say, you have a 50-year lease, but guess what? At the end of the 50 years, we get to keep. That's fine. That's fine. However, think about this. My other option is to not sign the lease. So whatever I have is not mine anymore either. Either way, if I don't sign, you can have it next week, or if I do sign, you can have it 50 years. Pay me now, pay me later, whatever. You all have gone on record so many times as encouraging development at that rate. You've got, hey, guys, this place is a mess. Let's fix it up. So everybody goes out and they fix it up. And they start fixing it up and fixing it up and fixing it up. And then they're saying, hey, that looks pretty good. I think I need that. Effectively, I don't know if that's really what you're saying. I trust that you do. I'm a seventh generation citizen of the state of Texas. And you know what? I expect and trust that those entrusted to ensure that my children have water, to ensure that all the things that you're charged to do happen. I also trust that you honor that fiduciary responsibility to me. You know what? Get some, I don't care if you're raising money, but that's not, that'd be great. Get some money out of that. And let that, take that money and ensure that my grandkids are going to have water. That's wonderful. But at the same time, your fiduciary responsibility to me, as a citizen of the state of Texas, is to make decisions that you are pretty darn sure are good. Now, as I said, I'm a member of the legal profession. You know what that means. Then call those questions. If we've got clients that we have to defend, they generally fall, some of them sooner, they fall into three categories. The first one is, these people didn't do anything wrong. These people over here are mad, and they're just mad at what they did, and they just want to sue them. So that's easy. We can get rid of those quick. The second category, though, are the ones that are guilty. Now, those two parts of that. The first group are the ones that say, you know what, we made a mistake, we did something wrong. But you know what, we're going to stand here and show you exactly how we came to this decision and considered every single issue until we exhausted ourselves. And we made that decision. We made a mistake, and why we're sorry.
Darren, could we ask you to kind of sum it up?
Wait a second. The third group is those that made a decision without due diligence of giving us an attorney. I don't know what you are. You do. I trust that you know the answer to that. If this is a great move today, if it's a great mistake, I trust you know the answer to that. Apologize for taking up your time. Don't have much other opportunity to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Karen. Next person is Mr. Nick Ray.
Thank you, Chairman Pena, other members of the board. My name is Nick Ray. I'm a lessee of Possum Kingdom Lake, and I'm also a citizen of the state of Texas, so I've got dual interests here today. I first, as a citizen of the state of Texas, I want to thank you for the task that you've undertaken to try and make the best use of the PK Lake area. That's a task that I don't envy. I don't have an answer for you. I'm not smart enough to give you an answer right at the moment. I'm not arrogant enough to try. But I do want to point out a couple of things to you. Have you thought about what is your real asset at PK? Your real asset is the leaseholder. And without a leaseholder, you don't have an asset. What determines whether or not you've got a valid and viable leaseholder on that lake? It's only going to work if it's financially viable for your leaseholders. The Staubach Company, you've hired them to come in and try and give you some idea, help you grasp what you have there and what you might possibly do with it. I've been involved in over 300 lawsuits or more, and in I don't know how many countless lawsuits we've had to hire experts. Everything from property disputes, defending lending institutions, defending insurance companies, defending product manufacturers, I've had to hire experts. In a handful of those, we've come to the conclusion that even though the expert was qualified, they knew their job, they knew what they were talking about, they were probably one of the best in the field, what they could offer us wasn't quite on track with what the real issue was. In this instance, the Staubach Company is qualified. They're good at what they do, but they've just gotten close. They haven't gotten right on track for you, and let me tell you why. In their report, under the analysis of Option 7, they say, this program allows for the VRA to implement a phased, market-based rental methodology without causing financial hardship to the current lessees. I don't know how they came up with that conclusion, but they didn't talk to me about it. I don't think they talked to very many people about it. Me personally, it will create a financial hardship. I'm here today just to give you some information to tell you their conclusion that it will not create a financial hardship is incorrect as far as I am concerned, and I'm willing to bet a week's pay it's probably going to be the same for about 90% of your leaseholders. Look at it from the the standpoint of where I might be 10 years from now. If I want to sell my property to someone, they're going to look at me and say, well, you're faced with about a $10,000 or $12,000 a year lease. I'm going to have to discount your property through a reverse amortization to get it down where I can afford to pay that kind of a lease. It's going to be continuously escalating so that your property, I've got to buy it at somewhere between 20 and 50% of what you're wanting for it. The biggest concern is going to be finance. My sources tell me, and I believe they're valid and reliable sources, that there's not going to be financing under the proposal from the TSC. I don't know who the TSC has interviewed. They haven't provided that information in their report. They haven't given you any valid information, and we've talked to lenders, and lenders will loan money under this program. They have glossed over and made general assumptions and general conclusions. I don't see any hard facts or any hard data on that regard. The one thing that really troubles me about all of this is an us versus them mentality. A year ago, it was wall-to-wall humanity out there. A comment was made this morning by someone behind me saying, well, everybody just figures this is a dictatorship and they, whatever they say or do doesn't matter. They're going to get it stuck to them. In essence, we're looked upon as though we've taken something from the state illegally. We've been getting away with robbery. We've been getting away with murder for years, and the BRA has been subsidizing us. I'm troubled that the BRA feels that way about me as a leaseholder. I've never tried to get away with anything. I don't mind paying a fair lease rate, but we've got to come up with something that will work. What we have now is not right, but what's being proposed is not right either. I'm merely asking, rather than us versus them, there's got to be some way that we can come to some reasonable basis in between. In handling lawsuits, I've learned that when you go to trial, it's a zero-sum game. You've got one winner and one loser, and it ain't fun. Whereas in most cases that are settled, both parties walk away with something that works for both of them. And that's what's needed in this particular case. I hope and I pray that when it's all said and done, you will look at this, you can realize that what the Stop-Up company has given you is just the very basics of what you need. You've got something to work with now. Now's the time to take the next step and move to a point where you've got something that will work for you, work for the state of Texas, work for me as a citizen because you're making the most of an asset, but will also be fair to me as a leaseholder and to the others as leaseholders as well. I hope you will take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Our last card here is for Mr. Harrell. Is it Sandell?
Yes.
Okay. You're talking about items 6 and 7.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ford, board members, can't thank you for your updates. You know, I do want to tell this board that I believe you have an excellent staff, and your staff works very, very hard for you. And, Kent, I think you're the best we've ever worked with, the BRA, and my hat's off to you. I'm here to talk about items 6 and 7. On the bond capacity study, we have some differences, the city of Cranberry does, especially from Highway 377 south on the red zone. We feel like the traffic is not there to indicate the red zone at that location. Since our last meeting, I've been by that spot on numerous occasions. And the boating traffic, I mean, you know, it's hard to spot out 5 boats in that area. I think it's probably 10, 15 years prior to its time. So we ask that you alleviate the red zone in that area to allow for additional boating capacity. At your last public hearing, you indicated 9 acres was the limit per boat. That would require about 20,000 boats on Lake Granford. We're not there. We're away from there. So in the bone capacity study, we have some differences, and we'd like y'all to really consider looking at opening that up for additional traffic. On, we're a player with it. If it's enforcement that you need, we'll look at some annexation areas within the lake area that help you enforce that. If it's permitting, we ask you to permit the boats coming on our lake, but not the homeowners that live around the lake. So on item six, we ask to alleviate the red area from 377 south. Item seven, on the continued moratorium, I don't know if there was ever an official vote to disallow canals from this board. I think there was a staff level decision, Kent, am I correct on that? On the moratorium. So this board never took a vote on not allowing canals. It was sort of a staff action. That is a major impact to the city of Granbury of not allowing canal cuts. What I'm here today to tell you is we're a player for cleaning up Lake Granbury. Whatever it is that the city can do on their subdivision ordinances to make it more beneficial for BRA, we're going to work with you to allow the canals, to allow our homeowners to operate out of that. And I do not believe our homeowners impact the lake like it's indicated in the study. It is a $1 billion impact to the city of Granbury not to allow canals. There's very few areas where canals could still be built that we could utilize. Land is limited. You have a lot of cliff area. But please, board and commission members, please allow the cut-throughs within the city of Granbury where we have water, sewer. We'll work with you to get canals at a level that we're not going to have stagnation in it. We'll aerate whatever BRA would like us to require. We will require and work with you to the best of our ability to make sure that we don't have any hazardous areas. And I've got an email coming from the mayor. It'll be a letter I'd like to present to each board member. So, Mr. Ford, Kent, thank you all very much for our honesty. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. That closes our public comment. Item four.